When Madeleine Cunin talks feminism, she knows what she's about. As the first woman governor of Vermont and the first woman in the U.S. to serve in the office for 3 terms, she's lived a life at the front lines of feminism and been a beneficiary of the movement. Her latest book is called The New Feminist Agenda. Cunin told Steve Paulson that while women have made great progress, there's still work to be done.
Where we haven't made progress is how to deal with that age-old problem, which is how do you earn a living, have a job, and take care of the children, the sick, the elderly. And with so many women in the workforce, that's a real problem today. And the workforce haven't changed, but families have changed.
It's interesting to hear you say this because, I mean, that was not really the feminist agenda back a generation ago to deal with these kinds of family issues. It was breaking into the workforce. That was far more the agenda, wasn't it?
That's right. And, you know, liberation, the key word was to liberate yourself from the old assumptions and the old patterns and to really give women the freedom to develop their full potential, to be educated, to be able to work. And that has happened to a great extent. But families today, where most families, both the man and the woman, are working, or else it's a single mom working to support the family, they're really flummoxed by how to do this all. And the feminist movement in other countries focused on these family work issues right from the get-go in the 70s. And American feminists didn't pay much attention, frankly, to who's going to take care of the home, who's going to take care of the children. So we've got to now focus on new policies, which are not new in the rest of the world, but are new in the United States, such as access to affordable, quality childcare, workplace flexibility, and paid family and medical leave. We've not stressed those policies adequately. It's not that government should do it all. We know that won't work in America, but government can strengthen families by providing these kinds of benefits, may not be quite the right word, but those kinds of opportunities for especially women, but increasingly also for men.
Well, I was going to ask you whether you see these kinds of family policy issues as a feminist issue, or is it more a family issue because so many men are also affected?
You're absolutely right. And I had a debate about using the word feminist in the title of my book because for some people it's still somewhat toxic, but it really isn't only for feminists. Feminists have sometimes led the way on these issues, and that's what I would hope, but they can't do it alone. Women, regardless of whether they see themselves as feminists or not, all experience these tensions in their lives between caregiving and supporting a family. But it's not only women. It's increasingly men. It's increasingly the elderly, the disabled. You know, all of these groups could benefit from greater workplace flexibility, for paid family and medical leave so that if you have an emergency, you can take time off. If you have a new baby, you can take time to bond with that infant and not fear that you're going to lose your job or your paycheck.
Now, when you talk about these kinds of policies, are you saying they should be mandated? I mean, everyone, regardless of where they work, where they live, should have basically the same kind of family leave?
Well, you know, the word mandate always scares off half the population, but I think you obviously don't have to take that family leave. So it's not a mandate on the employee, but it would be a requirement of the employer. And let me just put it in context. Take the issue of paid maternity leave. The United States is one of just 3 countries in the world that does not provide any form of paid maternity leave. And our colleagues in this tiny category are Papua New Guinea and Swaziland. So yes, some companies are presently providing paid maternity leave, but it depends on where you work, it depends on your boss, depends on your job. And my point is, it should be available to everyone. And the employer does not have to pay for it. It can be a small tax, which is the case in New Jersey and California, that the employee pays, just like unemployment insurance. It's called a temporary unemployment insurance program. So it wouldn't cost very much. And the benefits would be enormous in terms of child health, in terms of the mother's health, in terms of how the children progress. And it would pay off for the employer, too, because he or she would be able to hold on to a valuable employee.
Well, I'm struck by how a number of young women I've heard from, women in their 20s, even in their late teens, many of them don't like that word feminism anymore. They don't want to be considered feminist, even though I think if you actually talked with them about a lot of the issues that matter to them, they would sort of line up with some of these issues that you've been talking about. I guess the question is, has feminism become a dirty word in some circles?
In some circles, it always was, frankly. You know, people think of feminists as angry, man-hating, or lesbian, or whatever they think they don't want to be. But I may be overly optimistic, but as I've been talking to audiences, some women are saying, I like the fact that you use the word feminist, but I don't want it to be construed as exclusive. We really have to be very broad in our building a constituency for implementing the changes I'm talking about. And I think there's a little glimmer of hope that younger women are beginning to realize that what they took for granted may be taken away. And the whole chapter of recent history surrounding Sandra Fluke and her dismay that she couldn't testify before a committee of Republicans in the Congress on contraception, and then she found a group of Democrats who had listened to her. And Rush Limbaugh elevated her to fame when he called her a slut. And I think a lot of younger women suddenly said, hey, this is a wake-up call. We don't have this forever. We have to get into action and fight for what we have.
I want to back up for a moment and talk some about your own personal history, because you have such a unique story. You were the first woman governor of Vermont. You served three terms, first woman in the country to serve three terms as governor. How do you see your own career, your own life within this larger trajectory that we've been talking about?
The feminist movement and the environmental movement really shaped me and kind of gave me the energy and the idealism to get involved in politics. And by the way, I have four children and had to maneuver this road between work and family as well.
Did you enter the political fray after your children were of a certain age, or were you into politics from early on?
I was from early on. When my youngest child was two, I was elected to the Vermont legislature. But keep in mind, the Vermont legislature is part-time, so I could be home most evenings for dinner, and it wasn't year-round, met about 6 months a year. So as my children grew up, I went up the ladder in politics, and by the time I was governor, three of my children were in college and one was in high school, and I had a spouse who was supportive. He had his own busy career as a physician, but, you know, we juggled. This whole idea of you can achieve a perfect balance is not quite accurate, but you can do different things at different stages of your life. And I was fortunate, frankly, because I could afford somebody to babysit, somebody to be home when the kids came home from school. For a lot of working mothers, they can't afford the kind of childcare I could afford. So back to your question, I haven't lost sight of the real purpose of the feminist movement, even though I was the beneficiary of it. I'm still passionate about these issues, and I really see this as the next revolution, that we've got to restructure work, we've got to restructure our values. You know, everybody says family values, especially the conservatives, but we as a country have to really value families, not by talking about same-sex marriage, not by talking about gun control, but by talking about how do we give our children the support they need, both financially and in terms of love and care.
I have another question about language. Can men be feminists?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My husband is a feminist, a self-proclaimed feminist. But we also have to welcome men more vigorously into that league. I was speaking at the Kennedy School the other day, and a young man was there, and he said, you know, he went to a women's meeting and didn't feel welcomed. So I think we have to open up our arms and say, please join the cause. We welcome you. And we also have to figure out how to not make a joke out of the man or the father who stays home with his kids. You know, we always call him Mr. Mom. And I interviewed a stay-at-home dad. He said, I'm not Mr. Mom. I'm a dad. And so, yes, I think that trend is growing where dads want to be involved with their kids. They don't want to miss out like their fathers did who were workaholics and couldn't come home in time to read a bedtime story. So, yes, women have to change a bit, and men have to feel comfortable in fulfilling their dual roles as good fathers and good providers.
Governor Kunin, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
Madeleine Kunin served 3 terms as the first woman governor of Vermont. She was also the Deputy Secretary of Education in the Clinton administration. Steve Paulson spoke with her about her book, The New Feminist Agenda.